JB looked behind him, expecting to see Doc climbing up the wall at any moment. But he wasn't there. There was more blaster fire coming from the Baron's residence and surrounding the general area, but JB couldn't pinpoint exactly where it was coming from.
Where are the others?
They must be pinned down by more blaster fire.
JB's attention was now focused on the rocket launcher the Mutie had set up.
I didn't see that before. I thought your people weren't supposed to use those kinds of weapons.
Islier lifted the long tube up in front of him and looked at it with awe.
We aren't. I brought this for you. My brother and sister here have another weapon like this for your friends.
JB turned and saw two more young people holding a rocket launcher together on their shoulders.
What you've set up here looks like an M1 bazooka, and they've got an M9. These would help get my friends out of there.
You could probably shoot the projectile at the two men at the top of the building, but the third fin on the projectile is damaged, and I'm unsure if it will go where you want it to.
JB took a look at the building and the men on the roof and agreed with the Mutie's assessment. Hitting the top floor and knocking those men out of their position would be next to impossible with a single shot. The damaged rocket needed to hit something bigger, much bigger, that would cause all sorts of damage. And JB knew just the target. Sekhmen and civilians were dying all over the street. The combination of fire from overhead and behind was too much to combat.
We might have to make a run for it.
It's too risky.
Might be our only chance.
Ryan and the others turned to see some sort of rocket slicing through the air headed toward the Baron's residence. A moment later, the rocket slammed into the side of the building about two floors up. A few seconds later, the dust cleared enough for them to see the damage. There was an entire corner of the building missing, as a bite about 10 feet across was taken out of the wall on the third floor. A fire had started deeper in the building and was gaining strength as it burned. But for all the noise and commotion, the blaster fire from the rooftop hadn't abated.
Nice shot!
Give it time. I think I know what JB's doing with those rockets.
And then, as if on cue, a second rocket shrieked over their heads and smashed into the building about a dozen yards from the point of impact of the first rocket. An explosion every bit as powerful as the first ripped into the building, sending a second cloud of smoke into the air and making the air around them acrid and full of dust.
Cover up!
Ryan pulled a kerchief around his neck and over his nose. Christy and Doc did likewise, although Doc took the extra time to fold his kerchief neatly before tying it tightly behind his head. The blaster fire from the rooftop suddenly stopped. Ryan looked up and saw the two men trying to gain their footing. The building was trembling beneath them. The blaster fire elsewhere on the street stopped too. Everyone's attention was focused on the Baron's residence, as they all wondered if it was going to fall. That was, all except for Ryan and the friends. Ryan stood straight, leveled his blaster on the Sekhmen behind them, and fired into the group. Bodies jerked and spasmed, and Sekhmen fell to the street dead. Soon, Christy and Doc had joined in on the slaughter, and the few Sekhmen who had survived the opening barrage of fire had turned and run. Some were able to get away, but most died before they could take a step.
Let's move!
The three friends turned and ran for the wall. Behind them, and then all around them, the ground began to rumble. Ryan glanced just once over his shoulder and saw the face of the building falling away, slipping onto the street. People on the street and in the building were crushed beneath tons of rubble. The friends kept running and then climbed the wall. JB was there to meet them at the top.
Nice shooting.
Very funny. I almost missed that first time.
Ryan turned back again and saw that the rest of the building had fallen as well, taking the new Baroness, her sec force, and just about everyone else in the Ville who lusted after power, with it.
Come on, let's see how Jack's doing.
The sun was up by the time they reached Azaxir's place. Behind them in the distance, a cloud of dust floated up over the Ville in a column of gray and black. Small fires burned too, lending a reddish cast to the gray haze that shaded the sky over the Ville. They were greeted by one of Azaxir's daughters, who led them to the dining area and served them a hot meal of sausage, egg, and plain cornmeal bread. Upon hearing of their arrival, Mildred left Jack and went to meet with the friends.
How is Jack feeling at this hour?
He's gonna be fine. I wasn't sure about the antibodies, so I started him on them slowly. Turns out their quality's pretty good, and I've been increasing his dosage. He's pretty sleepy at the moment, but he's ready for visitors.
Ryan stuffed his mouth with sausage and bread.
That's great news.
How did he go inside the Ville?
Been on worse missions.
Baroness is looking for a new place to live.
Ville might even be looking for a new Baron.
Mildred turned to Doc.
Did you run into your lady friend while you were in the Ville?
Doc swallowed a mouthful of egg, then gently wiped the corners of his mouth with a clean bit of an old shirt that had been made into a napkin.
Alas, I did not. But as more time passes, I suspect that while our paths crossed for a brief moment in time, I believe we were never destined for more than that. She was a lovely woman, and she might have been just what I needed at the time, but I cannot help feeling now that there was something about her that was not right. I do not think she would have fit in very well with our group. And now that our ordeal inside the Ville is over, I feel that it is probably for the best that I did not find her.
The room was silent for a moment, but Doc wasn't finished yet.
Besides, no woman can ever replace the deep and abiding love I bear for my dear Emily. Our time together was as close as any man can come to heaven on earth.
Doc looked up at the ceiling, his eyes glazing over in a blank and vacant stare.
I am a fool to have loved and forgotten, and I vow never to commit such a transgression again.
What is wrong with him?
Mildred came to Doc's side.
Nothing. He just needs some rest.
Azaxir signaled to one of his sons.
Islier, help Mildred take him to my room and make sure he is comfortable.
Azaxir's son and the physician helped Doc from his chair and escorted him out of the room. Once they were gone, the Inheritor leader turned to the two men.
Was there a reason why you did not want me to tell your friend about Moira and her mother?
Yeah, Ryan. I'd like to know that, too. You know we're always supposed to be honest with each other.
That's true, JB. But did you see how he was reacting to losing her? Imagine how he'd be if he knew the truth, that the loss is permanent. One day we'll find a way to return Doc to his time. And I don't want his mind to be any more screwed up than it already is, especially over some woman he met for only a few days. I owe him and his wife that much.
I suppose you're right.
The two Deathlands warriors smiled at each other.
Come on, let's go see Jack.
Later, the friends gathered around Jack's bed in the bowels of Azaxir's underground home and waited for the albino teen to notice they were in the room with him. They didn't need to wait long. The young man's left eyelid began to flutter, then opened fully. The other eyelid followed, fluttering like the wings of some butterfly for a moment, then opening wide like that of an eagle. Jack was alive and aware of his surroundings.
Hi, Jack.
Ryan put a hand on Jack's shoulder.
Hey, welcome back to the land of the living.
JB flashed an uncharacteristic smile.
Had us worried there for a while.
Worried? I should say so. Why, without the help of our gracious host, Mr. Azaxir, we might never have been able to gaze into those pale red eyes of yours.
The rest of the friends made themselves comfortable, knowing that Doc would be talking for a while.
And all the while, you were no doubt oblivious to the battle being fought on your behalf. Each one of us nearly bought the farm several times during our ordeal, and all for the sake of one life. But we've all been close to death, have we not? I am reminded of a quote by Frederick Scott that goes, "So often have I met death face to face, his eyes now wear the welcome of
Doc,
a friend's."
Doc! Never thought say this. Glad to hear your voice.